Welcome to the Racing Edge podcast number 2 with myself, Nick Rowlands, and my co-host, Mr. Brandon Warren. How are you this evening, Brandon?
The race today has brought me to drinking, Nick. I'm that stressed out. I am a pissed off person at the moment. I cannot believe what happened. So we have plenty to talk about today. Let's get this introduction shit over with and let's get this going.
Exactly. He's absolutely right. There's been a lot of goings on today with a chaotic race in Malaysia. It was a very eventful race from the get-go, actually. I mean, if for people that missed it, obviously, it was Alonso that had the moment at the start of the race with the essentially exploding front wing after contact with Vettel in the first corner. Everyone thought he was going to pit, including Ferrari. Well, actually, Ferrari made a late call, and he went down the pit straight, and it exploded underneath his car, and everyone had to start on inters at that point as well, so the crossover point came in, and Vettel was, well, first of the year, I guess, Brandon. He just came in, was the first into pit lane and came in far too early. The first sector was an absolute nightmare still to drive, and it gave Webber and nearly one of the Mercedes the upper advantage.
Yeah, speaking back on that Alonso incident, you know, I don't know what was going on there. It's like, you know, you think common sense would prevail, and I guess that this goes to show what happens when groupthink sort of takes place, and you got to have absolute trust in your engineers and what they're saying, and because that trust is what helps you win championships, and, you know, and the trust goes two ways. But I think we saw the bad side of that trust in a late call. When the whole time, you know, Alonso was driving him like, what the fuck, man, come on, get me in the damn pit. But yeah, it didn't work out that way. And that was just a crushing blow for Ferrari. I mean, this is, you know, this wasn't the way to be going about things. Everybody was talking them up. And like I said in the previous podcast, this is a time where you got to maximize those points. You can't be making those silly mistakes. You got to capitalize on the people who do. But who knows? I mean, maybe, like I put in my article, maybe he was just trying out this new, you know, nose design that Ferrari was going with, and they decided just to, hey, let's just test it. Let's see if it helps.
Well, there may be that as well,
But
all led to a pretty hectic moment after those pit stops where everyone came back out on the slick tyres and was getting used to slick tyres and having to adapt to that first sector in particular. And once it all had shaken off, it was Webber that led the majority of the race, obviously, and then it came to the final round of pit stops. They all had dived back into pit lane again, and Webber had come out literally centimetres in front of Vettel. And at that point, the chaos seemed to ensue. A call was made from pit lane to say, you know, to Vettel, stop being so silly. In the moves he was trying to pull, and at one stage Webber even pushed him right up against the pit straight, eventually making the overtake, which led to Vettel going on for the next 10 laps, or 7 laps, whatever it was, to actually take the victory in the end. And it was controversial, to say the least, because we heard on the radio this multi-21 as well, which was to hold position, that apparently we heard back in Brazil as well, but I don't recall that. But it's a situation that has been brewing for a while, I think. It's happened on 3 different occasions in particular, and now we're at the point where it's happened today. But it's happened in such a way that I think has annoyed a lot of fans, simply because of the fact it's made it look like Vettel is bigger than the team. Now, I think that's quite a dangerous area to be getting yourself into, when you make yourself look bigger than the team. And Vettel essentially has done that today by completely ignoring team orders. So I guess, Brandon, what we're going to discuss here is there's 2 things. You know, what is your take on team orders? And also, what do you think about Vettel essentially disobeying a direct order coming from his team that essentially pay his wages? So what do you reckon on that one?
Well, first to go back on that move when Mark was actually leaving the pits, I mean, I think it was more of a controlled chaos. The chaos did not come until a little bit afterwards, where Mark had already established himself as, you know, tires got up the heat. And at that point, Vettel had his chance. He had his chance. And he got orders. And he chose to ignore those orders. And Mark, I think in confusion, just in a little bit of desperation, kind of pushed him a bit. But Vettel went past anyways. And I guess I'm going to start with that second question first, trying to be bigger than the team, and what I think about that, it was absolutely disgusting. I mean, some people went on to say that, you know, Vettel might have won some titles, but he's no champion. Okay, now, I think Vettel does deserve the championships he's won. He's put some work into it. But what I think is very undeserved is what people say about Mark Webber over and over and over, that he's just the perfect number two, that he doesn't, you know, he's not, he had his chances to beat Vettel. I think what today showed was that not so much that Vettel places himself above the team, but that probably Vettel's been above the team for quite some time. And, I mean, he did a fucking, it was a horrible apology. I mean, it was absolutely disgusting, pathetic apology. He didn't mean it. And there's not really anything you apologize for after that fact. And, you know, at least he was upfront about it. And, you know, I remember Christian Horner was saying, you know, there's pretty much nothing we can do. I mean, at that point, and here's the sad thing about it, he can now act without impunity. He's won three titles. So now it's out there for him. He can act without impunity because he's a winner. So they just have to put up with it as best as they can, as long as he doesn't actually crash cars at the end of the day. But this sets precedent for that sort of situation to take place now. Because now we know that Mark Webber is not going to trust the multi-21 when it comes up. They need to think of a new code, by the way. Everybody knows what that means now. So, why are they even having a code name for that? Who knows? Maybe that's what confused them. But at the same time, it's just, he's not going to trust that now. He's not going to be easy with that if he finds himself in that situation. And he's going to take the fight to him, which is what, you know, what he fucking should do. And I think that, I don't know, it just showed a lot of things. It just, I think it got people really mad when they thought about the previous years and when they thought about the way team orders have been in Formula One, which I can understand this from two ways, team orders wise. I can understand if you're running a team and you're trying to maximize points, at some point you have to give back to the team because they gave to you. You did not get, Vettel has talent. He did not get to where he got on his own. There was a car there. There was a team there. There were people who helped him there, especially Mark Webber, who helped him there. So to slap them right back in the face like that is one of the most dishonorable things I could have ever seen. And I'm sorry, but sportsmanship and honor are still a valuable thing in Formula One. And just because you see yourself as a winner and you'll do anything to win, well, there's a way to go about winning. There's winning and then there's how you won. And I think at the end of the day, that's actually what really matters. It was disgusting. Mark had every right to flip him off when he was sitting behind him the whole time, pissed off. He was deceived. And it wasn't, it was a synthetically, the situation that where Mark was letting off was synthetically created. And that's what really like burns my asshole about this, is that Vettel just duped him. I mean, he knew better. What was he talking about? He was confused. The man wasn't confused. He knew exactly what he was doing, and he did it. And I think what it shows in the power paradigm in Red Bull is that he knows he can get away with it, and he's going to continue to do it if he has to. And that the power probably has already always been on his side. It's just now we're seeing it go from covert to overt, and now it's going to cause a problem. And I think that's why we saw Christian Horner and Adrian Newey with those somber faces, because they couldn't do fucking shit about it. But anyways, go ahead. Sorry.
No, you're absolutely right in everything what you've said. You have said there. Christian Horner actually gave an interview with BBC quite a while after the event had ended as well, and after a debrief, and said that they'd shaken hands and they were going to move forwards with it. But Mark Webber was quite vocal, even in the heat of the moment after the race, where he still seemed quite composed, that he really wants to head back to Australia, jump on his surfboard, forget about everything. Forget the world around him and really think on what he wants. And he even said in the last 10 laps of the race that he really was not sure on what to think anymore and where to go forwards with it. The big thing that's the question that's asked, I guess, is there's two actually, is people's view and opinion now on Sebastian Vettel. For me personally, I think one thing I found quite interesting is in Australia, he was actually booed on the podium. And also, even though Sebastian Vettel is the youngest triple world champion and a triple world champion, you've got Fernando Alonso, Kimi Raikkonen, Lewis Hamilton and Jenson Button, all with fewer championships to their name than Sebastian Vettel, but are much higher on the popularity list than what Sebastian Vettel is. Now, I'm not saying popularity is a big thing, but the popularity of a driver can sometimes reflect them as a person as well, and it's clear that someone such as Vettel does not have that appeal, personality and persona that those other four drivers have and give off, and actually love to see that those fans' favourite. I mean, we just said 1 week ago, what an absolutely superb podium we had. It was one of the greatest podiums you could have ever seen. But Vettel was third, but you had the two other drivers up there that were more of the fans' favourite. Today, you couldn't have more contrasting scenario and situation where you had three glum faces on a podium. I mean, that's insanity. We were talking about Formula 1 here. There's drivers further down the field that would thrive and love the opportunity to stand on the podium. And you've got three glum faces that have essentially reflected team orders or team orders gone wrong. Now, what we also need to look at is the fact that Mercedes pulled team orders at exactly the same time.
Yes.
With Rosberg being told to sit behind Hamilton. Hamilton was clearly using his tyres more, and he had to, was in a much higher fuel conservation mode. And Rosberg, I don't even know how much fuel he would have ended with at the end of the race, because Hamilton was lifting so much, but Ross Brawn, very authoritatively in his voice, was saying to Rosberg, no, we want these cars home in these positions and we want to bring the cars back. And it showed that there was respect level. And even afterwards, Rosberg listened to what they had to say. He was very diplomatic and he was very dignified in the way he went about his response to Sky Sports. And I thought that the way he handled it was superb. And it's like you said, if the roles were reversed, It would have been the same scenario. You know, he would have done exactly the same thing. But with Vettel and Webber, we saw it in 2010 where they came together. It almost happened again today. And even when Vettel says there's respect there for Mark and Mark says there's respect there back, there may be a respect on a competitive level, but to the point of where you respect a person for who they are, I think that's been thrown out the window probably more than once. And there is this element of trust now, because Mark Webber has lost trust in Vettel completely now, but he's lost trust in the team. There's nothing stopping the team from saying, right, Vettel, you've just passed him, but now you slow down and let him back by, because that's not right. But the team didn't do that. So I sort of hold the team somewhat responsible as well. Now, people will not agree with me whatsoever on that, because Vettel was the main man. But I'm sorry, Christian Horner or anyone on that pit wall could have said, Vettel, you have to let Webber back by now. You know, we called this with their multi-21 or whatever it is, but they still didn't do it, and it still went on. So Red Bull can say, woe is me, but they're their own worst enemy at the same time. You know, you can't win. You cannot go into a scenario and situation thinking that you're going to come out the other side okay if you know that what has taken place at the time is fundamentally wrong. They called it because they knew they had the gap behind. There was no one in front of them. They were on for the 42 points, or 44 points, whatever it is. And they were set, dead set. And that is what the team wanted. They wanted the maximum points. And they nearly lost the lot by Vettel, quite frankly, being stupid. And the comparison's been drawn with Schumacher and Senna, etc. Yeah, those scenarios, but they weren't happening to the driver, they were happening to the other driver, Barrichello pulling over, for example. They were happening to the other driver. Now, sure, Schumacher and Senna may have been in a situation where they had to do that, but they never really were at any point in their careers. The only one I can really think of is the one that Martin Brundle said about, where Coulthard and Hakkinen had the gentleman's agreement in Melbourne 1998, and the favour never got thrown back to Coulthard. It was a year later when he got a third place back off Hakkinen, but that's nothing. So, would we see anything different from any other driver? I don't know, because clearly we're in a situation where a driver is bigger than the team.
And that's scary. I think you've identified it perfectly. Ross Brawn was very clear of what he was saying. He said, you cannot pass him. It is crucial that we get both cars home. Do not argue with me on this. He was authoritative. That was proper management. Multi-21. And, you passed him. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of chatter going on that we didn't hear. And I'm sure that Webber brought up quite an amount of, protest. But they didn't listen to him. And you got to think, what's going on in Mark Webber's head? He's kind of suspected weird things going on for some time, and I'm sure he knows more than any of us that things have been going on. Maybe he's been promised things. I mean, that man has a hard-knock life at times when you think about his career, but he's always kept himself under control and has been as respectable as possible. And I think people wouldn't have blamed him if he would have just slammed Vettel for what he did, but he didn't do it. At the end of the day, he still had that team in mind. But it shouldn't be down to him setting that example. It should be up to the managers in that situation. That is a management problem. And you know what? Okay, yes, Vettel's going to act without impunity, but he doesn't just do that out of anywhere. You don't really see somebody just act that way out of anywhere. They respected the authority there for quite some time. So that it goes to show that, you know, they gave him a leash that was, you know, quite loose, and he got, and you know what? He left it. There's no more leash on him anymore. And they can only blame themselves for that and the events that they let happen over the past few years. Now, I don't know what goes on behind the scenes, because it seems like there's a lot of politics that goes on, that where Christian Horner really doesn't have that much control of the team as people might think he does. There's things happening from the, you know, the big wigs above that sort of pressure him into certain situations, stupid situations. And it's just, yeah, I think it was very interesting that we saw a complete contrast of both extremes. We had orders on both sides. We saw it carried out one way, and then we saw it carried out another way. And I think at the end of the day, what you really, yeah, you can blame the people, the management that caused this. Just let them race. But at this point, it made sense. This is a point where team orders made perfect sense. Okay, they had enough time to race each other. Now we need that data. We need that vital telemetry data so we can understand these tires better so that we can defeat our rivals in the future. And that's what they're thinking about. Vettel disobeying orders to set precedence to put them in a very, very harsh situation and a very negative situation, whereas Rosberg eventually understood. And what an honorable guy. And, you know, props up to Lewis Hamilton, who did not wear that third-place hat. He said that Nico should deserve to be up there, but they both sort of understood the team. And you know what? Hamilton had gained a lot of points in my book for what he did there. That was a very honorable thing to do. And, yeah, it's just, it felt awkward. That entire, like I kind of said and I wrote down, you know, they could have just unzipped their pants, taken a piss on the entire crowd, and I don't think it would have been as awkward as what we saw that up there. It was just, yeah, it just felt wrong, and just, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's going to make it an interesting season, and I couldn't help but think about 2010. If you remember in late 2010, after we have already kind of said, you know, people were like, you know, oh, yeah, well, Webber, you know, there's equal treatment, and but we saw he was not given 100% support. Anybody's going to, you know, if you give 110% towards a campaign and you're only getting 90% back from your team managers, then you can't do it. It's not going to happen. You're not going to win that title. You've done everything you could, and then some. But and people said, okay, you know, he could have, you know, maybe not gone through so many mistakes. But at the same time, he was being sabotaged by his own team. It only made sense to let him win. They took a huge risk in doing that. And yes, props to Vettel for great driving. But at the same time, he was given that. He was helped out with that in a lot of ways, and it just irks me, because in the final race at Abu Dhabi, I remember Helmut Marko saying, you know what, the spirit of the competition is that we don't do team orders, that everybody has equal opportunity, that we're not supporting one or the other. Here at Red Bull, we honor this spirit of competition. Bull fucking shit. You honor Sebastian Vettel, that's who you honor, and you fuck Mark Webber, the guy who's helped you get there along the whole way, because for some reason it makes more PR sense. And Mark's always had a solid head on his shoulders. He's always come back from adversity. The man's a true champion in my book. And I'll put that down right, you know, you can quote me on that any day of the week. I think he's more of a champion than Vettel would ever be. And that's not just a moral champion, just a champion at life. A guy who overcomes things. He gets things done. He does his best despite all, you know, all the negativity that's thrown towards him, despite the situation that's thrown towards him. And it's just sad to see, finally, you know, he gets a situation to where he did everything he could, and he did that right, and he did the right thing, and yet he was deceived. Not only by his he probably expected it from Vettel, but he probably didn't expect it from his team to do nothing for him. It was just wrong. It didn't feel like racing. It just felt wrong. And, it just brought me to, what I thought about. I'm sorry, I've been drinking a bit, guys, so I'm kind of going back and forth. But at the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, when he said talking about Helmut Marko talking about the spirit of competition, and then not even half a year later at the British GP, we see team orders being enacted, and it's like they forgot all about those values. Oh, that's what we valued in 2010, but in 2011 it was a little bit different. See, and it's just like you're wishy-washy like that. It just showed that you're not consistent as a team manager, whereas Ross Brawn has always been consistent with that, and for good reason, I think. But I don't think that this whole asshole factor is what helps you be a true winner. Vettel was not a true winner at this, and he might say that he doesn't care what people think, but that's bullshit. Eventually, that cracks you. You care what people think. You really do, and it will get to you after a while. It's just he's just throwing up a self-defense mechanism. And you know what? That's why we talked last week about people appreciate Fernando Alonso. He was the honor of his driver of the year, despite Vettel winning these titles. There's a reason for that. In a lot of ways, and it's funny though, Nick. You're talking about Vettel, but you and I have talked about it before. He seems like such a great guy off the track. Really funny, easygoing person. And then competition sort of reveals a completely different side to him, and it's like a strange paradigm, don't you think?
Yeah, and I'll tell you the person that actually emphasized that as well is that Ted Kravitz did his post-race report, Ted's notebook, and it was very insightful in what he said. He said that Vettel is such a lovely guy off the track, and he's wonderful to get along with. But he said just before they cut back to the actual presenters, he turned around and he said, "I actually lost respect for Vettel though today." And I thought that was quite a big statement from a guy like Kravitz, who is very respected in the pit lane. And he just said, "I lost a little bit of respect for Vettel today." And that's quite a big thing for someone of Kravitz, who is respected in the pit lane as well. Okay, he's part of the media team, and no one seems to seem like the media. But people listen to him. People are intrigued. They want to give interviews. He always finds out the information. He's always there. He's always there on hand. And for someone like Kravitz to say it, I thought was very, very interesting. And not only that, with the position and the situation that Red Bull have put themselves in, they've got a real uphill challenge now in how they deal with this for the rest of the season. How they actually go forwards, I am not entirely sure. Apparently they've shook hands and moved forwards. I don't fully believe that. I think Webber is going to be going back to Australia and seriously considering his options. But something I want to throw at you, Brandon, also here, is that Vettel faces two things now. Is that if Red Bull end up losing Webber, whether it be before China or at the end of the season, who do they bring in to replace him? Because the teams, every other driver now in Formula 1, every other driver in the world has now seen that Vettel has some sort of upper hand within the team. Who would want to go into that seat next to him? It was said today Bernie Eccleston had tried to actually get Hamilton into the Red Bull seat last season. He was trying to help him into the team. He said, "Look, this is not happening. They've signed Webber. Let's get you in Mercedes." He was trying to get Hamilton in there. Can you think how explosive that partnership would have been? Probably even more so than what Hamilton and Alonso were in 2007. So not only do they have that problem of who they now draft in as the second driver, because I seriously doubt Webber's going to carry on for another year after this. But if Vettel wants to leave Red Bull, and there have been the rumours of him going to Ferrari, although Alonso has categorically said to Domenicali, "I do not want Vettel here." Then Vettel, if he wants to go somewhere else, how in the world can another team almost trust him to not try and take this number one status and priority and disobey team orders? Can you honestly think what Ross Brawn would have done if Vettel had done that to him? He would probably smack him in the face.
Yeah, on the podium.
He would have kicked off so much. Yeah, on the podium as well. Ross Brawn would have been absolutely furious.
And replaced him with Michael Schumacher.
In fact, if any team boss that wasn't being dangled like a puppet was actually in charge of Red Bull, unlike Christian Horner, then I'm sure a lot of team owners would have been absolutely fuming today. You know, the team bosses and everything would have got involved in that. I think what we've seen, it's the softness of Christian Horner. It shows once again that he's been dictated to by Helmut Marko and Dietrich Mateschitz. And finally, the fact that Vettel can't do anything wrong. I mean, even in this situation, and they try to blame Webber in 2011, I think it was, when he's trying to pass Vettel at Silverstone, or it might have been last year. He was trying to pass him at Silverstone, and they told him to hold back and not pass him. Well, firstly, he gave it a go. He was told not to pass. He gave it another go and realised, okay, let's not do this. And he never even made another attempt after that. All right, that's not the same scenario. Okay, Vettel actually passed him. But not only that, I think it was to show that the respectful driver that Webber is, because even in the heat of the moment, when he's got his teammate all over his ass, going into turn four, we saw this with Nico Hülkenberg and Kimi Räikkönen. How close? Well, they touched out of turn four. They came wheel to wheel out of turn four.
Yes.
What does Webber do? No. He gave the outside line to Vettel knowingly, because if he pushed him any further, he was going to go off the track. But Webber held the inside of turn four, got off the corner, but worse than Vettel did, because he had the clean line. He had the racing line. So there was no way in hell that Webber was going to be able to get off there. But he gave the track respect to Vettel still, even in that situation. And to me, that speaks volumes as well of just the sort of character he is. If anyone says that Webber gave up that position, that is nonsense. He did not want to crash those cars, and he made sure that did not happen. Granted, argument could state he nearly put him in the wall, but Vettel, if he really wanted to do it properly, could have gone all the way around the outside of him, most likely, just as we saw him
break.
Come out the pit lane. You know, it's crazy. It's crazy. And Vettel has lost a lot of people's respect, not only from ourselves, not only from fans, but crucially throughout the pit lane and the paddock. This potentially could be really damaging for Vettel, and he says he doesn't really care what anyone else thinks. I'm sorry, that's rubbish. You hear boos on the podium in Australia, you've got to start scratching your head. If Vettel wins in China, well, okay, it's Chinese fans, do you honestly think that the fans are going to be on their feet cheering, clapping their hands after what we've seen for any race that Vettel may win this season now? I really do not see many fans getting up and celebrating a Vettel win now throughout this season, unless they're diehard and be like, oh, Vettel is God's gift and everything. I'm sorry, but if you were to do that in the workplace, disobey a direct... I mean, sure, you can argue your case, but if you disobey it directly, the 9 times out of 10, you're either going to get some sort of reprimand or you're going to get sacked. But Vettel's 2 wraps have been cotton wool and probably won't.
He knows he won't. That's why he did it. And I think that's even more telling of the situation, just how desperate it is. It's micromanagement. And Horner has allowed himself to be micromanaged. You know, maybe he's sacrificed something in order to have a greater gain in the end. And I think, you know, at least on the NBC Sports, when he was talking to Will, he said, you know, it's the best problem you can have, where you have two drivers, you know, getting a 1-2 and finding each other, and you're having to play with those orders. But you could just tell he had this like distant look on his face, like he wants to do something about it, but he can't. He knows he can't. He knows he's stuck. I mean, we heard Helmut Marko's comments on Webber. Webber's not part of the agenda. I don't think anybody wants to be part of that team because of what the team has done. And yes, you're right. At the same time, who's going to want Vettel? I'm sure Vettel's going to bring a lot of money, and in the end, he'll get on a team. But what's he going to do for that team? Are they going to trust him? What sort of team dynamics are going to take place there? Is he actually going to get along with the team? Is he going to be able to grow from this? And, you know, I'm not going to damn the guy forever. I've lost respect for him massively, lost respect for him, but more so the team rather than just Sebastian Vettel, because they sort of allowed this to happen. And yet again, in a lot of ways, I've gained a lot of respect for Weber. Like you said, he gave him track position here. He gave him a little bit of track. He didn't push him. He didn't be an asshole about it. You don't become, and it's one of the things that I love, and it's a quote that I always use from Friedrich Nietzsche, which essentially says, be careful when you fight with monsters, lest you become the monster yourself. When you stare into the abyss gazes back into you. And that's very true. Weber could be that person. He could be that asshole, but he's not. And he chooses not to be. He chooses not to become that. Because there's a better way to win at life. There's a better way to win a Formula One race. Especially when he won and talked about being, you know, it's pretty good for a number two driver. You know, that's one of the greatest wins you could get away with right there. It's just a commanding win. And against all odds, yet again. I mean, you think about this guy. Metal, and he's just getting a metal bar, or a metal rod out of his leg, finally. He's finally getting over this injury he's had to deal with. Or strange rules, like in 2009, that kind of worked against him because he was heavier. Or the car sort of being more designed towards Vettel's driving style, especially with the rear end and the downforce. And we kind of saw a difference in driving and a difference in improvement. And, you know, it just makes me think, not so much of how much Vettel's getting away with, just how much support, how much, you know, adversity Weber's had to be given on that team. And then it makes me wonder, why did he stick with it? What went on behind? I would always be interested to see a book from Weber that talks about what went on behind the scenes at Red Bull, what he was promised. If he thought, you know, if he was just fighting the good fight, you know, I mean, it's amazing. The man is an older driver. He's still one of the best out there. And it's just sad to see this happen to him. And it's sad to see that Vettel does it that way. And you're right. He's lost respect. It's going to take a long time. And I think it's going to take situations where Vettel gives Weber the right of way. But even then, you can't just apologize this away. And you can't even do that because people are going to say, well, he's only doing it because of this. You know what I mean? I don't know. He's put himself in such a tough position that I think it's going to psychologically affect him over the course of the season. And it's going to ruin his championship, you know, his challenge for the championship. And in a lot of ways, yeah, I can't think of what driver would – you asked me earlier what driver would want to go there. Well, desperate ones, of course, but I can't – you know, even then I can't think. Some people are kind of happy with where they're at, you know. Unless they're just going to offer Sebastian Loeb a drive in the Red Bull car, I don't think they're going to. I don't see anybody who would just grab that immediately that would actually be worthy of it.
You're correct. And I think the thing that's happened here as well is that while this has happened today, his argument could say, well, Vettel actually needed knocking down a peg or two in the first place. So this actually might actually have a detrimental effect where, you know, he's reeled back in. You know, and he has to start playing the team game again. But what it also means for Weber is I think he's got, essentially, he's got two options. Option one is to basically just say, look, you have screwed me over more times than ever in my life. I have had enough of this, and I'm up and quitting, leaving right now. He could easily do that within the next couple of weeks prior to China. He very much could do that. Or he comes out all guns blazing, doesn't give a crap about anyone or anything else, and he drives probably one of the greatest seasons he's ever had, and he drives the wheels off the car, not giving a crap about anything else around him. We could very well see such
a championship
drive
push
and determination that actually drives him towards the championship. I mean, I'm not saying it will happen, because you could see it either way. I mean, the third option is that he just comes back in, does the job, doesn't really give a crap about it, sits back, relaxes, just sees the amount of points he can get, and then retires at the end of the season. All right, there's three options there. But nevertheless, we're going to see a very different Mark Webber come China. We're going to see a very different Sebastian Vettel come China. But I don't think we will see a different Red Bull. And I think that's the biggest problem, is Red Bull is fundamentally the issue here. Mm-hmm. They've got fundamental issues within that team, and people, they're always going on about the little team that can. They're the biggest spenders in Formula One.
Yep.
They have been for the past few years. They're the biggest spenders in Formula One. Oh, we're this fun little family team and everything. Bollocks, are you? You're the biggest spenders in Formula One. You spend more Well, then what Ferrari do in a season?
You're the Toyota that won.
Absolutely insanity. And when people are seeing like Raikkonen win last weekend and thriving off it, and they're seeing Alonso battling and wanting it as much as he is, and yeah, okay, he's had a bit of a setback now, but at least it's come early in the season that he's had his setback. And the thing is that he can recover from this as well. But then we see other drivers that are clearly more are pushing these cars to the absolute limit. And you start to question and wonder what is the motivation behind some drivers, and to get to the pinnacle, and you want them to succeed even more. I mean, just a quick shout for Jules Bianchi, once again 13th place, drove the wheels off the car.
Amazing.
I heard today he makes the difference in high speed corners. I mean, if that is not commitment, then I don't know what is. I mean, it goes to show that there is a big step from a GP2 car to a Formula 1 car, and if he is making the difference by going through high speed corners. The rate he is in the Marussia, there's a lot of talent ahead of him, but that's not the point we're on about here. I guess the final point I want to raise with you is a double question, really. Is firstly, do you believe in team orders, and secondly, do you believe it brings a sport into disrepute?
I believe in team orders. I think it works. I think there's a time and place for team orders. I think it was silly to try to hide the fact that team orders actually took place. I mean, how many times does a driver go right against his teammate? You know, McLaren provides a good example that there will be wheel-to-wheel racing as long as they're careful and respectable because they know their drivers. I don't think it brings any sort of negative thing to the sport. I think what people are perceiving here is actually down to the team management and how they back it up if they allow these team orders and if they're fair to both sides. You know, because if you're going to provide equal opportunity and have team orders, you better be providing equal opportunity with how you distribute those team orders and how you honor them when it's one driver over the other and vice versa. And two, I think it comes down to the driver and their own honor, their own ability to drive well. I mean, if you're going to change team orders, you're going to have to change the whole fundamental part about teams and how they score points in the sport as a whole. You're not going to – people have said this is an internal problem. It's not really a problem. It's just something that has to be solved at the team level. You cannot legislate this. It's not going to work. They will find a way to have some sort of team order in some way, no matter how many times you find them, blah, 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 blah. Because in some cases, team orders are absolutely necessary, and they're beneficial to the team, and in the long run, both drivers, because they might have better cars to start with. They might gain crucial telemetry or better understanding of the tires in this case. So, yeah, and at this point, I think team orders can stay in and be fine. It's not the team orders that's the problem. It's the people implementing them. It's the teams implementing them. So I guess in a lot of ways, it's a great filter to kind of show you the true nature of some of these teams and the true nature of, the drivers themselves. And if you're doing a quick shout-out, I'll do a shout-out to good old Jenson Button. And a McLaren, you know, they're dogging McLaren the whole time last week and then throughout this entire, time. But they've improved a bit. And you know what? Good on him. Yes, pit problems aside, you know, he did a good drive. There were some accidents ahead and he was sort of like, you know, handed to him in a lot of ways. But, you know, he drove his heart off. He drove the best way he could. And at the same time, and I said it earlier, shout out to Lewis Hamilton. I mean, that was the most, probably the best way you made the best out of a really bad and awkward situation, and I forever have respect for what he did there, and I'm really surprised at how this guy has matured. And I guess in a lot of ways it goes back to what we were talking about with teams. It's sort of amazing how a driver will change when they're at a different team, and I'm hoping for that second scenario painted out with Mark Webber. And maybe we can ask everybody else a question. If you were Mark Webber, what would you do? What do you think about team orders? And do they actually hurt the sport or help the sport?
I agree. That's a great question for us to ask, and we'd love to hear from you as well, whether it's by email or comment. Is exactly what Brandon said. Do you believe in team orders? And also, going forwards now, what would you do as Mark Webber? They are two big questions that we have to ask, and it's going to be a fascinating couple of weeks to see what the repercussions are and what the fallout is from this. It probably will be nothing, to be fair, after because we know it's Red Bull. And just to say on a point as well is the difference between what we saw with Red Bull and what we saw with Mercedes is that Rosberg and Hamilton clearly have a long-standing friendship. I mean, they're on Twitter saying that they're always doing something together. There's a friendship there. It's a genuine friendship between them. And Hamilton did not want to damage that. He does not want to damage that, full stop. And he said that, you know, he should be up on the podium and everything, and, well, they'll probably go back and debrief with Ross Brawn and everything and understand where they were in the race and why Ross Brawn called it. There is a genuine respect level to each other, and I think that is such a huge, huge thing when you have a respect level between you, a genuine respect level, and as friends. And it goes to show that it can work in a team, and it has the potential to work in a team. And I think that is one of the strongest aspects that the Mercedes team have, and in going forwards as well, it can only work and help them. Even though they want to be competitive on track, it can only work to help each one of them out at the moment. Whereas in a situation in a team like Red Bull, it's becoming destructive. And when it becomes destructive, that's when things get really, really nasty. When we saw with Prost and Senna, how nasty that got. And this could get very, very nasty as well.
I only hope that Webber maintains his integrity and that he takes the fight to him. That's what I hope to see. And Mercedes, I hope, you know, I think a lot of teams will have learned from this, from what they see here, the team dynamics and stuff. It can only help them, the other teams. And it's sort of like Eric Brulier was talking earlier about this, and it's sort of an indirect way of commenting on Red Bull's troubles, because he talks about, you know, they pay a lot of their technicians and everything half of what Red Bull pays, yet they have a good team structure. They understood the human factor behind Formula One and building a team structure from the ground up, and how that is a solid foundation. A lot of people say it, a lot of people pay lip service towards it, but if you're going to walk the walk, if you're going to talk the talk, you're going to walk the walk. And they do that. They do exactly that. And he says there's no superstars at Lotus. We don't center ourselves around, and it's what in psychology it's called charismatic leadership. It's good leadership, but at the same time, it opens up for micromanagement. It opens up for a team centering themselves, all of their resources. Their team is all centering themselves around one person. And it can be detrimental. And I think in a case of like Fernando Alonso, he's a great charismatic leader. But then we see Sebastian Vettel. He's a charismatic leader as well, but we see him do it completely wrong. Whereas, and here's the advantage to Kimi Raikkonen, he has no charisma. He just does things, and he says it how it is, and people like it. And it kind of, you know, opens up a great working relationship there. And I think in a lot of ways, he's learned from this experience, Eric Bullier, and he's been able to set up a proper team that if they lose Kimi Raikkonen tomorrow, it's not going to be the end of Lotus. It's not going to cause this huge hustle bustle. Whereas for some teams, and Red Bull in particular, you know, I could call a lot of that into question. So if they lost somebody like, what, Adrian Newey, or if they lost Vettel. And I think in a lot of ways, if they lose Webber, who else are you going to find that has the patience of that man? And I guess for me, that's the only points that I can make on this, and I think I've said everything I need to say.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, we're looking to obviously structure these a little bit better, but due to the nature of what happened today, we essentially just wanted to vent exactly what we thought, and we hope you've enjoyed that as well. And obviously there's the questions there of what do you think of team orders, and also what do you think Mark Webber should do next, essentially. So from myself, Nick Crowans, and Mr. Brandon Warren here, my co-host, we hope you've enjoyed this, and we hope you've taken something from it, and we hope to hear the comments back from you. But until the next podcast, take care, and we'll see you soon.
You stay classy, Internet.